Welcome to Learned Lag, a podcast about yesterday's Learned League questions and answers. I'm George.
And I'm Amanda. George is in Zephyr A, and I am in Zephyr B. This is season 19 for me and season 23 for George.
This is day 20 of season 91, as we enter the home stretch.
Indeed.
The first question asks us what British pop act only released two studio albums, Fantastic and Make It Big.
Yeah, this one I had to set aside for a few minutes because I was certain in particular that I'd heard of Make It Big, and I would probably think of the act in question. And so I kind of thought about it for a while, thought, you know, one of the most successful bands of the 1980s or acts, you know, who could that possibly be? That they're British, and yet only a couple of albums suggest someone that, a group that had sort of a meteoric rise and then just kind of nothing afterwards. And so it just kind of, I just kind of let my mind work on that for a while thinking about other things. And then a short while later, Wham came to mind. I thought, oh yeah, they were huge. Their videos were everywhere. You know, inescapable. You know, and there's an echo of that in our latter day celebration of Whamageddon. And, you know, then, of course, they broke up as an act, and George Michael went on to have, you know, his pretty successful career as well, you know, shortly thereafter. Poor Andrew, his partner, did not. But, yeah, once that came to mind, I was like, yeah, that fits. And I'm pretty sure Make It Big was a Wham album. And so that all clicked together, and I put down Wham! Exclamation point.
As I'm reading this question, I'm thinking British pop act, most successful 1980s. I'm like, okay, Pet Shop Boys, maybe Duran Duran. Only released two studio albums. Like, oh man, this sounds like Wham! Fantastic and Make It Big. Were those Wham! Albums? They sound like Wham! Albums. Like that was very much their kind of,
audacious,
peppy, poppy, audacious. Yeah. And I let this one sit for a few minutes and Make It Big by Wham. Yeah, that sounds right. 83 and 84. Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yep.
I actually owned the Andrew Ridgely's album that came out years later. It was pretty good.
Sure.
Wasn't great, but sure, it was pretty good. If you liked Wham, you would have liked that album.
I did, and nobody liked that album but you.
Nobody heard the album but me.
That's also true.
But yeah, I also said Wham! With an exclamation point.
And that was the correct answer. So nobody here has been Whamageddoned by this podcast. I just want to make that legal disclaimer. Yes. Question two gives us the name of four novels spanning 1984 through 2020 and asks what Pulitzer winner wrote them and is a preeminent author of Native American fiction.
I have not read any of these, which meant that I knew that my guess was wrong.
Yeah.
Because I have read almost everything by Sherman Alexie.
Ah.
But I couldn't think of another preeminent author of Native American fiction who was active that far back.
Mm.
Like, I know a few other Native authors, but not from the 1980s. No one who was writing in that time period. But I couldn't think of anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
The only one of these that I think I've actually heard of is The Night Watchman.
Okay.
But I'm not sure that I've heard of that one.
Mm-hmm.
It only came out last year, so I don't know. So I said Alexi.
I did much the same. I knew that I'd heard of The Roundhouse and The Night Watchman, but that's about it. The other two I did not know at all, and I just assumed that these were sort of slightly lesser known works than some of Alexi's other works, and the others would be dead giveaways. And so I just thought that is the preeminent author of Native American fiction that I know, and that shows how little I know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I also put down Alexi.
It was Louise Erdrich.
I did not realize that she was Native
American. Nor I.
I have not read her books.
Nor I, but I also realized as the day went on that I am confusing her with Barbara Ehrenreich.
Okay.
Who wrote Nickel and Dimed.
Sure.
And other
More like sociology commentary kind of like nonfiction books.
Yeah, like sort of personalized, memoirish nonfiction.
Right.
But yeah, I feel as though I have in fact heard of Louise Erdrich, but I just she occupies the same place in my mind as Barbara Ehrenreich, and that's why I have not remembered her as a native author or in fact as a novelist.
File under women authors E, apparently.
Yeah, and vaguely Germanic sounding. Mm.
Yep, so no luck there.
Yeah. Question 3 asks us for name of a pepper that is also the capital city of French Guiana.
This is the one that really boggled me for a while, and I thought, you know, surely this is the name of a pepper that I've heard before. Mm-hmm. I couldn't come up with the capital off the top of my head, although I have, you know, tried to educate myself a little better on some of these geography type questions, at the very least kind of being aware of which countries are vaguely where in the world and some of their capital, you know, cities and things. And so I was sure that I'd read about this. And so I thought, if I can think of, or at least I kind of proceeded as though I thought, if I can think of a plausible pepper name, then I think I can, you know, piece this back together. Mm-hmm. And for a while I was stuck on a lot of pepper names that basically have Spanish roots, like the, you know, I go through all the ones that I can think of. It's not jalapeno, it's not habanero, it's certainly not Scotch bonnet, and just going through, like, it's not poblano, although that you know, that was kind of in my mind for a little while. I had one that was like añero or something like that, like in the answer box for a while, but then I kind of reapproached the question because this is French Guiana. It's going to have a pepper with the name derived from French. Mm-hmm. So that had me thinking, well, what is the type of pepper that appears in a lot of Cajun cooking? Because that might at least lead me to a plausible answer or trigger some other ideas. And it took me a long time to get away from thinking it was basically andouille, which is a type of sausage. Okay. And my brain would keep saying, what about the andouille pepper? And I'm like, that's not a pepper. It's a sausage, brain. Try to focus here. And finally, I was like, it's the one that's in Tabasco sauce. It's cayenne peppers. And I thought, cayenne, that sounds like it could be the name of a city. You know, it's, I suppose if Thorsten had nerfed it out further to be like, it's also the name of a popular luxury car model or something like that. That would have completed all the puzzle pieces. But I thought cayenne, yeah, I think that sounds right. And it makes sense that, you know, kind of a northern South American country, you know, might have a pepper native to it that also had reached, you know, had expanded its reach across the Caribbean or the Gulf of Mexico to New Orleans or something like that. So with all that in mind, I was feeling pretty good about putting down cayenne.
I just couldn't come up with a pepper at all that might have worked. I even if I'd thought of, oh, it must be a French one, I don't think I would have landed on cayenne. I eventually just said habanero. Just kind of because, well, you know, Havana is a name of a place.
True.
So maybe habanero is also a name of a place, and they were both kind of derived from the pepper, or vice versa. I don't know. We'll go with that. Habanero. Mm-hmm.
The correct answer was cayenne.
Well done.
Phew. Yeah, that was my big effort for the day.
I can't believe I never noticed that about the capital of French Guiana. That seems like a name you would remember.
For all you talk about it day and night. My goodness.
Well, I do know that because of the French Guiana is part of France. Like it is a department of France.
Right.
And therefore the question, what country does France share its longest land border with, is Brazil.
Yeah.
Because there's more of French Guiana bordering Brazil than there is France bordering Spain or Germany or anywhere else.
Right. Moving on to question 4, we are asked to give the nickname of Harry Alonzo Longabaugh, an actual outlaw, Wild Bunch member, and a couple other things, too.
Mm-hmm. And what tipped this one over for me on first reading was Film Institute Namesake. And that, of course, is the Sundance Film Institute, founded by Robert Redford, who played the Sundance Kid.
Right.
In Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. So that, I think I would have eventually come up with it because I knew, I remembered that name as being someone, and I would have eventually gotten to, I would have gone through like all the various famous Western nicknames, and I feel as though I would have eventually alit on the Sundance Kid, but having the film thing in there nerfed it for me.
Sure. Yeah, having the film thing in there, I think the Institute in particular, without the Institute, the title character might have gotten me there, but only might. You know, I had sort of the similar thought process is like, what is an outlaw nickname that's very associated with film and a film institution of some kind? And thought of, you know, kind of really the Sundance Film Festival came to mind. I thought, yeah, I think there's an institute as well that's by that name. And thought, okay, then I have to make sure I piece together the correct answer that's requested here. Because it's not just Sundance. I don't know that that would be accepted as just Sundance, but the Sundance Kid, that phrase is from, of course, the title of Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. And so that's, you know, once I kind of pinpointed that phrase was what is, really desired, I think I'll be interested to see like if anybody, you know, when I see people post about the match day on Facebook or wherever, if people just put down Sundance, will that be sufficient? I don't know. In my case, I put down the Sundance Kid.
And that was correct. I will say I'm fairly certain that in the movie, at least, other characters called him just Sundance.
Okay. That could be an argument for it, for sure.
Yeah. But we shall see.
All right.
Question 5 asks us, what is the third category of Olympic gymnastics that is not artistic or rhythmic?
Yeah, this one I did not register sufficiently. As we kind of talked about earlier this evening, I watched the Olympics a lot when I was, you know, like in high school or prior to that, you know, growing up, and kind of lost track of doing so. Certainly after like 1996, because that was Atlanta, right? It was 96?
Yes, I believe so.
So I had some awareness of that. Or that might have been 92. Anyway.
Barcelona.
Okay. So, you know, I kind of remember up to that point. And then soon after that, like I went to grad school, I got married, like I just kind of had less opportunity, you know, had kids. And then kind of, you know, retook up watching them in 2008. You know, when we started dating, and that was one of the things we did is we, you know, got together on weekend, and that was, we watched different Olympic events. And so 2000 is right in that area where I was not paying any attention. I don't recall seeing this event either in the most recent Olympics. Just for whatever reason, you know, just got a lot going on. We don't sit down and watch all the events lately. So I just had to make a guess here, and I thought athletic sounded plausible as a third category where you have artistic, where it's clearly you're kind of doing an athletic dance, or rhythmic, where you're doing these forms and what have you. And I just thought, you know, this, I thought maybe this was referring more to things that are more tests of strength or more, you know, that have that look of being more physically demanding, I guess, than the ones that are supposed to look graceful or, you know, like it's easy to do or something like that. I don't know. I just had to make a good guess, the best guess I could. So athletic was what I put down.
Okay. I remember taking a Wikipedia dive at some point, presumably during a previous Olympic, and just, you know, what were the various types of various things, because there are a lot of weird little sub sports under kind of these major umbrellas. Like, I believe water True. Polo is governed by the swimming federation.
Okay.
Which kind of makes sense, but you'd think
kind of.
But at the same time, it's like really. Why is it not its own thing? It's
yeah.
You don't get a lot of crossover there, but
yeah.
And at one point, I just remember finding out that trampoline was the third. And it is considered a third completely separate form of gymnastics.
Okay.
I may have come over from the rhythmic gymnastics Wikipedia page because it is a separate thing from acrobatic gymnastics.
Sure.
What I had to discuss with myself internally for a long time this morning was, is trampoline called trampoline, or is it called something else? Like, is it called aerial gymnastics? For some reason, that was in my head. But I kept pushing it out because I remembered that it's just like all the references to it that I remembered was it's just trampoline. It's not even trampoline gymnastics. It's just known as trampoline.
So I
went with that,
and that was the correct answer. Well done. Final question asks us to give the city where August Wilson, the American playwright, was born in its predominantly African-American Hill District.
My first thought was Washington, D.C. And then I, for some reason, something in the back of my head said, no, it's Pittsburgh. And I thought, no, I'm only thinking that because I know a lot of people who live in Pittsburgh. And I thought, maybe it's Philadelphia? Because I wanted to tell myself it's not D.C. because there isn't a predominantly African-American particular district in the District of Columbia. It's the, you know, a large part of the whole city is predominantly African-American. And, you know, kind of the same with Philadelphia. And there are a lot of, you know, there are a lot of cities that are considered heavily black that you don't just say like, oh, there's this one place in them that that you would identify. But I just I couldn't convince myself that I wasn't just thinking Pittsburgh because I know people there. And I remembered I believe that one of his plays that became a movie was Fences. And I remembered like seeing I didn't see the movie, but I saw like a lot of stills from the movie. When it was out, and a lot of them looked like a very sort of dense city with alleys, and that could definitely be Washington, D.C. So I went with that.
Yeah, this one I really was just at a loss for. I kind of focused in on the idea of there being a hill district, as in an actual hilly area of a city that, you know, for whatever other people didn't want to build there or something like that. You know, these places become
hard to build on hills.
You know, to go to people who don't get the prime things because of their oppression. So initially I was thinking, is this someplace sort of adjacent to New York City? Because like just Harlem Renaissance, lots of things, you know, and black culture might be associated with that. But I didn't think that sounded right. And so I thought about maybe cities, perhaps more in the South, that had actual hilly areas to them. And that made me think of places like Kentucky and Tennessee that I think of as being, you know, kind of rolling hills. And so I finally settled on Nashville because I thought, you know, I didn't think it was Kentucky. I feel like that one just didn't ring a bell as well as, you know, Tennessee sounding more plausible. Maybe it's just because Tennessee Williams was a playwright. I don't know what my brain was doing there. But I thought, you know, Nashville seems like as good a guess as any. It's a city that I could imagine having a hill district. So sure, let's go with that.
Okay. It's Pittsburgh.
Oh, dang it. Anyway.
Yeah.
See, now, here's my issue with that. All of Pittsburgh is a hill district.
Yeah.
It's all hills.
Yeah.
How is a place a hill district?
Entire goddamn state is crumpled up.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Oh, well.
That kills me for you. That's just crazy.
Yeah. Had it, but didn't. Oh, well. I had three on the day.
Well, same.
Brutal.
It was a tough day.
Tough day.
Our friend group did not rise much above that I saw today. So, at the same time, I feel a little bit bad about some of these just because, you know, Louise Erdrich's pretty popular. Mm-hmm. For example, it's not like I never heard of her in my life. Mm-hmm. I know she has popular books. Olympic events are things lots of people know about. Mm-hmm. And August Wilson, same. Like, mm-hmm. these are all areas that don't seem out of reach to me.
Yeah.
But I was not getting to them today.
Yeah. Okay, it was a good poll, though.
Well, thank you. Well, yeah, I was pleased with that. I don't know. I had a hard time scoring that one in some sense for one of my opponents who had like a pretty good food and drink, but a pretty bad geography, stats for their past answers. So I'm not sure what to make of that one. I don't know how gettable it is. I really had to go kind of walk a path to get it, but it seems like other people could do that. So who knows? Yep. I guess we'll find out.
Yep, and that's it for today. Tune in tomorrow for more post-game analysis.
Follow us on Twitter at LRNDLG. That's Learned League without the vowels. And remember,
don't forfeit.
Don't cheat.